The following programming is sponsored by Doreen Taylor Music, LLC. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Peasley Media Group.
USA, what's going on? Welcome to The Scene with Doreen. I'm your host, Doreen Taylor, setting the scene each and every week to help you guys find out what's happening in TV, movies, music, sports, the arts, and everything in between. We're so proud to be syndicated on stations coast to coast and originating right here in the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia's number one talk radio station, Talk 860 WWDB. And always get insider access and go behind the scene on our show's official website, thescenewithdoreen.com. And it's another week. We've turned the page, and I'm here to give a big scene welcome to my incredible producer, Matt Manarek. Hi, Matt.
Hey, Doreen. How's it going?
Doing good. It's a good week.
Did I hear you say there's like inside information on the website?
I think it is.
Like there's like special content if you go
yes.
to the website. Man, I need to go to the website.
I need to
find out
do.
More about the show.
Yes, you need to click on me. Click, click, click. Uh-huh. Yeah. But yes, it's the way to keep in the know. Because everybody's in the know now of the
yeah.
scene with
yeah.
Doreen.
And everybody wants more information.
Yes. And we're now on TV. We're yeah. now on radio. If people are not tuning in, Daily Flash all across the country, syndicated television. It's pretty cool, I got to say.
That is cool.
It is. You can actually see my mug on TV and you can all see, you know, sorry to disappoint America. Sorry.
Your coffee mug or your face, do you mean?
Both. I have a mug and
yes,
my face.
If you I didn't go know what and you're you talking see, about.
It's true.
Both
I have
mugs.
The double meaning mug and mug. Yes, I get them both on the air.
There you
uh-huh,
go.
Uh-huh. See, you're missing out if you're not watching us.
Need to tune in.
Need to tune in. But you know about tuning in and seeing behind the scene and reality TV. I kind of think that's like a good segue because our guest coming up in the hour, he was one of the first that really defined that music reality TV show kind of thing, that format, when the height of it, American Idol. But, you know, there's so many more reality shows out there. Are you a fan? Do you ever get into any of them?
Yeah, not as much. Well, I guess I can't say not as much, but...
You're a Kardashian fan.
Oh,
come on.
No. Oh, my God.
I don't think I've ever seen one episode. I can honestly say I have not seen one episode, and I never, ever will. I think my brain cells, I can't lose any more than I already lost. And by watching that, I think they'd be all gone.
Yeah, I can't stand the Kardashian stuff.
No.
The Real Housewives of whatever.
Oh,
don't
yeah.
like them all. They're
no.
all. But their music ones, like, maybe not as much now. But
they were cool when they came out.
Oh, yeah. We used to watch, me and my family used to watch American Idol.
Yeah.
I think we started after season one because we didn't know much about it. But anyway.
Yes. Kelly Clarkson was one. And I don't know who two or three, but I do know four was Carrie Underwood. That was a big one.
Yep. That was a big one.
Yeah.
The one with Chris Daughtry, that was a big one.
What a career he had. He didn't even win. And yet his career was insane. Yeah, I really like him a lot. I would like him on the show. He's got a great voice.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
We used to watch Big Brother back in the day. That was always entertaining.
Do you know we were talking about that Big Brother, but also Real World? That was sort of like the first, wasn't it? Like that was MTV,
so. Yep.
I think.
And they just celebrated not too long ago. I think it was like their 30-something anniversary.
That's crazy.
Because I think it started in 92. I'm probably wrong, but somewhere around there.
That's crazy. You know, I was saying, I actually did an event years ago, one of my very first events that I did in my own music career. I performed at a place called Trust in Philadelphia, where we originate out of. And it's next door to the Betsy Ross House. And that's where they filmed one of the seasons, I guess the Philadelphia season of Real World.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
I didn't
they
know
lived
that.
There, and they were there, and then obviously they've come. It used to be an old bank, and then they all were living there, and now they use it as an event space. I don't know what it's used for now, but yeah. See, so we're a little bit of history of reality shows right here in Philadelphia too.
It seems like these days, probably 80% of what we see on TV is reality shows, and it's not reality shows that we're thinking of. You know, a whole bunch of people just in a house, but
no.
like you mm-hmm. have. These cooking shows, they're reality shows.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
These home renovation shows, those are reality shows.
Yeah. They're produced reality.
Right.
I guess, is that like a term? I think I just coined that. Like it's reality, it's real people, but it's produced. So they
right.
make sure that you're seeing what they want you to see and they're making good entertainment too. So it's not like, hey, because I'll tell you what, you follow me around with a camera for 24 hours, you are going to be bored out of your mind. Maybe there'll be 2 minutes in there that's like, oh, that's cool. That's worth watching. But that's not a show.
Right.
So they have to kind of make things exciting. The producers have to. You got to sell something, so you got to make it somewhat good.
Yeah, but they do a good job of it for the most part.
They keep it going. I thought it would die by now. It's still going. Or they're finding more reincarnations of the reality show, what it really is. Because I noticed they've sort of changed throughout the years.
Yeah, and then sometimes they could put a twist on something older and then sell it as something newer.
That's true. And you know, when are they going to make a real Truman Show? But that would be really boring. That would actually be really boring. If you know, because you think that was really cool and it was way ahead of its time, that movie with Jim Carrey. But think about it. If you followed, again, a camera crew with a little boy growing up, he's a baby. Boy, would that be boring.
That would be. That
and,
would
you
be.
You know, they're 24 hours a day, and I wouldn't want to watch that.
No.
You want splices, and you want excitement. So that's
what about, like, there's that other Ed TV, remember that? That's Matthew McConaughey.
Oh, yeah.
That was kind of like the Truman Show, but he knew about it.
Yes. Uh-huh.
That might be a little more entertaining.
See,
I don't know.
I think once you learn you're on camera, people are not real anymore. I'm not real. When I know a camera is on me, something changes. I'm Doreen, but it's something different. It's you know, actress Doreen, or it's radio host Doreen, or it's something else. It's not Doreen, you know, buying groceries at 2 p.m. on a Saturday afternoon, swearing at the guy next to me parked too close to me, or is, you know.
Because when the mic's on or camera's on, you're more conscious of what you're doing, and you turn on. Yeah, you're more worried. You kind of subconsciously worry more about how people are going to perceive you. So you kind of have to act a certain way.
Absolutely. When you're on, you're on. But, you know, I think we should get on to our guest today because we got a good one. Speaking of reality TV show and American Idol, as you've known him, but he's done so much more after that. So you ready?
Let's do it.
All right. My guest today on The Scene with Doreen became a household name during the fourth season of American Idol. Singer, actor, and producer Constantine Maroulis placed sixth in the competition behind winner Carrie Underwood, but his star was only just beginning to rise. Since then, he has been nominated for multiple Tony Awards, starring in Broadway productions like Rock of Ages, Jekyll and Hyde, Rock and Roll Man, and The Wedding Singer. Take a little listen. Yes, just wrapping up a successful run on the new rock musical East Carson Street, Constantine Maroulis is still rocking stages and making great music. He is appearing now with Broadway Sings Queen at the Cutting Room in New York City running through August 1st. So whether he's starring on Broadway, the smaller silver screen, or making headlines on Page Six, Constantine Maroulis is a busy man, and I am lucky to be able to sit down with him today to chat about his eclectic journey to the top. Welcome to The Scene with Doreen, Constantine. What's going on?
Wow, what an introduction. How could I ever live up to all of that? That guy sounds pretty good, by the way.
I got to tell you, the Jekyll and Hyde clip, oh, goosebumps all over. That your voice, you know, I've heard you do so many things. And just, wow, it's like that role was created for you. I know it wasn't, but it should have been.
That's very, very sweet of you. Thank you. Frank Wildhorn has become a great friend of mine and collaborator, just one of the great American contemporary composers in the world. And Leslie Bricus wrote the lyrics. Leslie Bricus, we lost about 2 years ago, led a beautiful, wonderful life, well into his 90s, incredible artist. He did the lyrics. He also did He wrote all the songs from Willy Wonka.
Oh, yes,
you know, like
yes.
Just incredible to get in the room with these guys sometimes. And that production of Jekyll and Hyde, we wanted to reimagine it. So we kind of did rock it out a little bit more and brought a little bit more of danger and, you know, sexy rock and roll energy to it. That was a lot of fun for sure. Thank you. Again, thank you for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. And sexy rock and roll energy. I think that sums you up. I think if you ever had to put something on a business card, I think that should be what you put on there.
Well, I'm getting a little older, so I think I'm aging into a different category. I'm not sure what that is. Maybe.
I don't think so. Like a fine wine. Wine only gets better.
Suburban dad wine, maybe. Like maybe it's boxed. It's like boxed wine.
Hey,
maybe.
Boxed wine is good. You know, red
There's
solo
some good
cup.
Ones now.
Yeah, you put it in a red solo cup. You've got a great night planned.
Boom. Boom.
You know, I want to talk a little bit about your start because you've done so much, and we'll get into American Idol, of course, and obviously Broadway and some of the cool things you have going on. But born Brooklyn, raised New Jersey. See, I'm a New Jersey girl. I am down south, though, pretty much down by Delaware. But you grew up in a Greek household, obviously, with your name. And you even speak Greek, correct?
I do. We didn't speak Greek as much. My parents spoke to us in Greek.
Mm-hmm.
My brother and sister are much older than me. I grew up almost like an only child, like they were out of the house, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I grew up very Americanized, but I understand it fluently. I can hang a little bit in the Greek. If I go there, you know, I pick it back up again. It's a lot like my Spanish, you know,
yes.
Growing up.
Yes.
I took so much Spanish and then I would be able to use it when I was working with guys and stuff like that. So it's like if you don't use it, you lose it. But I'm a very proud Greek American, no doubt. And, you know, just growing up in the Greek Orthodox Church was a big influence to me. I had this priest growing up in New Jersey that had a great voice.
Mm.
He had a great singing voice, this rich baritone. And, you know, it's quite a dramatic, like, divine liturgy and all. And I think the spectacle of it always was like a thing for me. Like the altar boys would come out. I was an altar boy. You know, there was all this iconery and just this kind of ritual. And it was like a show. We
yes.
put on a show every Sunday. So that was a bit of an influence to me, no doubt.
Yeah, yeah. And your love of music came at a very young age. I know that your passion was early, but you started trumpet at 11. You played trumpet.
I did. You know, back then you had to pick an instrument.
Yes.
Even if you were a singer and such. But I had such stage fright as a singer early on that
really?
I almost didn't want anyone to know what a big high singing voice I had, you know, not cool at that time in suburban Jersey to have like a high singing voice as a boy. And, you know, times are different now.
Yes.
But I was a little shy about that. So yeah, I picked up the trumpet, which is, you know, requires a lot of the same kind of breath control as singing. So it was a natural kind of fit for me and had great teacher, hung with the trumpet for a few years, and then really just jumped more full time into like the performing arts, you know, acting and singing and movement and such.
Do you ever play anymore? Do you ever pick up a trumpet? And would you remember if you did? Is it like riding a bicycle?
It's not like riding a bicycle. It's really hard. It's a really hard thing to pick up.
Mm-hmm.
You would think it's simple, three valves, whatnot. It's really hard. And, a trumpet, like if it's not been played, also needs maintenance, you know, and just
yeah.
it needs to be lubricated and needs to be, you know, loved.
Yes.
Mine is not.
Like
my
a woman.
Trumpet.
Sorry.
Exactly.
See, my producer's
Thank
giving
you.
Me the side eye
I
right
love
here.
It. I love it.
Yes.
You said it, not me. I love it.
See, of
okay.
course. And we're just starting.
Yeah.
We're just beginning here. So, you know.
Excellent, Smithers. Excellent. And so I do have my Bundy, which is probably like my parents definitely bought it secondhand. You know, in school, like there's always some guy that's got all the trumpets, you know, or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, we bought it. It's probably a 1970s Bundy, you know, probably 10 or 15 years old plus by the time I started playing it. I have it. I haven't unleashed it in a while, but I have tried to play it over the years. It's really hard.
Yeah, you should, like, you know, a lot of people, they take an instrument and if they're never going to play it again or it's not worthy of being an instrument in that way, which it breaks my heart, but they convert them into something like a lamp or something that you can have with you.
I'm way into that stuff.
Yeah.
I love an upcycle, you know, a repurpose.
Mm-hmm.
I'll consider turning the trumpet into something.
That could be like your trophy, like your fragile moment. You know, it's a major award.
Must be it. Must be Italian.
Must be Italian. Or Greek.
Yeah,
Greek.
So I'll look into that. I'll look into that. Very you know, fun. I'm a bit of a collector. Like if you saw my house, you'd be like, wow, you have a lot of stuff.
We call that hoarding.
It's not hoarding if it's awesome. If the stuff is awesome,
oh,
it's not hoarding.
Oh, I see. You justify hoarding. There's going to be the TLC show is going to have a new tagline on it now. It's not hoarding if it's awesome stuff.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
I like that.
And if it has a purpose and a place and it's clean and organized and you could see everything rather than it just be piles
of stuff.
You're
a collector. It's not,
I'm a collector.
You're a collector.
Yeah.
It's a nicer way to say
so
it.
So I have a heart. I like to bring stuff in. I don't like to send stuff out.
Yeah.
That's a problem. So the Bundy has stuck around for about 40 years.
That's cool. And no, yeah, think about it. You ever do anything with me, you gotta share a photo with me. You gotta send something to me, and I gotta like check out what you did with it.
Okay, I think I even have pictures of me in third and fourth grade, like playing in sectional.
Oh, you have to send that to me.
So that then to see what we did with the Bundy.
Yeah, that's a great social media kind of thing. Upcycling. That's a really cool thing you should do on social media because you have a good presence.
I like that.
Yeah, so maybe you can do
some. Thank you. I need some socials coaching. I'm terrible. But
no, you're not.
But yeah.
Stop.
But yeah, trumpet was cool. No doubt. It was, you know, just that first sense of being in an ensemble, kind of taking instruction, putting on a show, helped me with my singing, my confidence there. And then one thing led to another.
Yes. Speaking of getting confidence, I had no idea that before reality, you know, you'd made the reality TV leap, obviously, with American Idol. But before that, you actually appeared on another reality TV show called Eliminate. I'm not familiar with that show. I don't know that. You must educate me.
Oh, you're missing out because it was. OK, so I was in drama school in Boston. I was at Boston Conservatory, Berklee College of Music, like taking an insane class, you know, workload,
right?
In shows, directing shows, like working around the clock type of stuff, right? And I had the audacity to be like, yeah, I'm also gonna try to get like an agent while I'm in Boston, right? And back then it was like you responded to some ad, you know, somewhere, like looking for talent.
That was in the back of a magazine. I'm a little afraid of that ad. I don't know what you called.
Why can't I wear clothes?
Well, you never said what the role was for.
Dark in here, but cool. All right. So the first thing they sent me on was this. Okay, so it's going to be like Real World, but it's dating, but you're all going to like living and eating and drinking and hanging out together. Like this is the pitch. And I remember going back to my friends and being like, they want me to do this show, Eliminate. Before I could finish Eliminate, they're like, you have to do it. You have to do it. So I guess it was on like late night. Then it used to be on like UPN, which was like Channel 9.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which
UPN.
Like,
yeah.
UPN was like became CW or WB and Channel 11, you know, whatever. It was one of those kind of late night college-y shows. And I think it was regional because I don't think they had it in Cali. But, it was like that cheating show. Remember that cheating show the guy used to catch? I think it was called Cheaters.
Yes, I believe so.
That was like syndicated, like low rent, but it was like in a bunch of markets, but it didn't belong to any one station or something, right?
Right. It was a nationally syndicated
show. It was like one
show.
Of those things. Yeah. So Cheaters, Eliminate, same thing.
Yes.
Whatever. So yeah, I did that show and I won.
I was going to say, how did you do? I didn't know you won. You got to put that in there somewhere in your bio.
Yeah, no. But there are clips of it on Broadway, on the interwebs that you could probably find.
Oh.
I have like my short little like kind of like Beatles cut.
Oh.
Like a leather jacket.
Little mop
top. I take
top.
My shirt off. They're feeding us Long Island iced teas. I'm singing badly. The girl was cute. Like I was never going to lose.
Yeah,
she was cute and she was Greek.
Oh, well, then that was kismet.
It was a wrap. And we ended up dating. We definitely dated for like a few months, like, you know, casually, but
See,
it was
nice.
A good time. Yeah, a little TV time. Yeah, and like circa 2000.
It got you warmed up for what was about to come. And speaking of that, I want to get into that, but I'm going to take a little bit of a break. I'm chatting with singer, songwriter, actor, producer, and all around talented Constantine Maroulis. When we come back from break, we'll talk about Constantine's reality TV musical experience that paved the way to international stardom. See you on the flip side.
Tired of shopping for furniture and not finding what you want? Concerned about quality, value, or reputation of most online stores? GrossmanFurniture.com is your answer. We've been furnishing homes for 95 years, and we continue to offer our customers the best price every day, guaranteed. We specialize in customizing over 200 leading brands of furniture to fit your style, your home, and your budget. See why we've been the go-to furniture choice in historic Philadelphia for almost a century. Shipping nationwide, coast to coast, our virtual GrossmanFurniture.com showroom makes it easy and comfortable for you to shop online for quality furniture and decor. Check out our exclusive Made in America furniture lines. Visit us online today and allow us to help you make your dream house your dream home. Log on at GrossmanFurniture.com. That's GrossmanFurniture.com.
I was crying when I met you. Now I'm trying to forget you.
All right. Rockin', bro.
Yeah, man. Woo! Rockin'. It's hot in here. It's hot in here.
Well, Simon?
I just felt, as I was listening to this, that I just didn't want to be your next door neighbor.
Oh,
no, you know what I mean? We've all had neighbors like that, you know, who are kind of like singing all night long.
Call the cops on them.
And you just think, stop. And that's how I felt during that audition, if I'm being honest with you. I thought it was all over the place.
I think a lot of chicks would disagree with you.
Oh, yes, they would.
You know what I mean? Paula, what do you think?
One here disagreeing.
Oh, thank you very much.
No,
appreciate
I think
that.
You're unique to this competition. I think you are what this competition needs.
Thank you very much. I feel the same way. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Randy, my man.
I'm impressed that you left the band and that they don't know that you're here. And you can sing. The verse was all over the place. Simon's right. But the chorus, you pulled it together.
Simon.
Not for me.
Nope. Paula?
Yes, for me.
Thank you.
Randy.
I would say yes, man. I think you deserve another shot.
I appreciate that. I can do it. I can do it. I promise.
Constantine, you're going to Hollywood, bro.
Oh, man.
Hollywood. Yeah.
Rock and roll.
Yeah. Constantino.
Welcome back to The Scene with Doreen. I am, of course, your host, Doreen Taylor, and I'm chatting with Season 4 contestant, Tony Award-nominated singer and Broadway producer, Constantine Maroulis. Welcome back, Constantine. Got to be weird hearing that all these years later.
Oh, my gosh.
This is your life, Constantine.
Very surreal. And I honestly remember walking into that room the minute or two before that audio kicks in, not even. And just like I had been through. Remember, back then that was open call, 20,000 people, Washington, D.C., sleeping out on the streets. It was madness back then, right?
It was like the height. It was the height of American Idol.
It was wild. Mm-hmm. It was wild.
Mm-hmm.
And but I went through two or three rounds before I walked into that room right then.
Yes.
That you don't really see on camera, right?
Right.
Not really revealing any big secrets. You know, like you have like an open call, they whittle it down. You go to another producer, they whittle it down. Then you go in front of like Nigel and Ken, you know, kind of off camera. But they tape everything so they can almost match it up. Like the background is the same, so they could match it. It may or may not be the same day you shoot. Mm-hmm. So there's all that stuff going on. But I kind of lucked out. I remember going down there on the $10 Chinatown bus.
Wow.
With an old girlfriend who we used to audition like on musicals together. Now, I had just been on Rent tour for two years.
Yes, you were. People didn't realize you had quite the career before auditioning for American Idol, but you didn't have an agent.
Hustling.
Yeah, you didn't have
an agent. I was hustling. I basically right out of school, you know, did Williamstown, got an agent, got Rent, did Rent, had a band, blah, blah, blah. But then they were like, we're not bringing you back, you know, next year. We're not renewing your contract. That they do that like on those. That's the kind of show where they keep it very young. They keep it cheap. Like once Oh, the next contract is more money. So they just bring in a new cast, especially Rent, especially all those years later.
Yeah.
So we went down there kind of, I didn't really know the show. I mean, you had heard of American Idol. They had only had three seasons.
Mm-hmm.
But I was in school, you know, I was working around the clock. I was in every showcase, every show, every this. I was partying, I was hanging out. Then I was on tour for 2 years. We didn't like have the phone, we didn't have the internet in our hand like this.
Right, right.
Like we didn't have the, you know, so we didn't like go look up, oh, what happened on Idol? It's like you either saw it or you didn't see it.
Right.
You heard about it. You knew names, but I never really sat and watched the show. And I had heard that the age range went up. So I was like, I need a job. Let's go.
Yeah.
And I had been on open calls like for Rent before that I did not get.
Mm-hmm.
I actually got it through an appointment years later. So walking into that room, like there were extra TV lights, I remember. And it was like, whoa. And then you saw Simon and Paula and Mark McGrath.
Yes, he was there.
Who, mm-hmm. sidebar, became a dear friend and is a dear friend still, as all of them really are.
Mm-hmm.
And Randy. And they looked like wax figures of themselves, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
Like
Madame Tussaud.
I don't know how old, you know, Paula, of course I knew who Paula was, but yes. Simon was this like TV enigma that you had kind of heard about.
Right.
And, you know, you've seen him on like the cover of a magazine, like being all mean, but he's like this enigma that you don't really know much about because you hadn't watched the show.
Mm-hmm.
Randy, of course, I know his work.
Yeah.
But I was too young when he was like in Journey, you know, so like don't really know who he. And then Mark McGrath was a big star at the time.
Yes.
Still, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like this very surreal thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're in like a random room in a hotel. It's not like it sounds good in there, you know? So
oh,
it's like,
yeah, no acoustics. No, uh-uh.
There's no acoustics.
Uh-uh.
You're like, I mean, it's just a weird thing. And all these people behind the camera. So that was like the whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is it. Yeah. The other stuff was mellow. There was like one camera here or there.
Mm-hmm.
This was like, this is going to be on the show.
Right.
And I think right away when I went down there, it was like, so what's your story? You look different than everybody else. I'm like, well, I'm 28.
Yeah.
And I'm in a band. I was just on Rent tour. I basically got fired. Like mm-hmm, they're not bringing mm-hmm. me back. And I have a band. They don't know I'm here. They don't.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
They alluded that in the clip. Yeah. They talked about that.
So
yeah.
Then that was my hook.
Yeah. You have to have a hook.
Brooklyn.
Yes. You have to have a hook.
You're a Brooklyn cool hipster guy. And I'm like, not really. I'm not really that either.
You are now.
I'm actually from Brooklyn. I was born there. But the band, yeah, we're in Williamsburg. And so I think they liked that cool, different element. And then they ran with that, like the, you know, revealing to the band later that I was going to be on
the
TV show.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I've always said the reality TV manipulates reality to the point where nothing is real. I always thought the same thing of American Idol, and it was clear always who they wanted to win, and they helped that choice along in the way when the show was produced. And I know that you've been vocal in the past about the creative choices the producers made during your season and even including your elimination.
Well, I mean, look, you know, having been on the other side of producing some stuff, you want to make the best show.
Absolutely. It's a product. Mm-hmm.
Me going home early was a great TV moment.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no world where anyone was going to beat Carrie Underwood. So it all ended up how it was supposed to end up.
Right.
You know,
right.
I became this underdog. Then we create Rock of Ages. Obviously, I'm jumping ahead, but like I play this underdog in the show.
Yes.
You come in thinking, oh, he'll play the cocky rock star part, right? No, I play like the kind of dorky, affable wannabe.
Mm-hmm.
Which maybe underneath it all, that is what I am anyhow, right?
Oh, so we're getting down to the bolts here. I think we're going to have a...
Well, I mean, I often say, I'm like, maybe I should have been Tony nominated for the role I played on American Idol as like Constantine the Rocker, you know?
Yes, yes.
But I think what people really gravitated towards is more like, yeah, he's like a little bad boy, but not really. He's basically like a musical theater guy that can also really pull off, you know, rock and roll music. It was the time of my life. I mean, it's crazy. And the family you meet there, the people, what you learn, you know, I had this progression from like, you know, drama school to Broadway stuff and bands and what was going to be the next thing. And this was essentially like my master's or my doctorate degree, you know, it was like that next level. And then what would I do with the opportunity? Because when we were in the heart of the season, whoa. I mean, that, you know, you could feel the earth shake.
Mm-hmm.
When 30 million people are glued into something live,
yeah,
like you feel it's very intense. But again, like I never allowed myself to think like I've made it. Like I'm like, okay, this is good for the next 10 years. Mm-hmm. What am I going to do with this opportunity? Then thereafter, what are the next 30 years look
right.
like? So
right.
that's how I always think, you know, so it was like building blocks.
Mm-hmm. And you used that block to build another block and another block. And boy, did you build a building. And I did want to say, though, that, you know, a lot of people wonder what the dynamic is behind the scenes. And, you know, you're getting a lot of egos in a room and or in a building or on a stage. And
oh, it happens fast, too. You go from like
you have to be friends, quote unquote, yeah,
mm-hmm. to like diva real fast.
Yes.
Man.
And I mean, was it tough navigating that while you were there when you all of a sudden you got somebody who's sitting next to your bunkmate or somebody there who's just all of a sudden got the ego of the size of, you know, Colorado? I mean, what happens? How do you deal with that? Did that happen to you while you were on the show?
Well, yeah. I mean, what, looking back, you see shows like Survivor or Big Brother or something like that, where it's all gamesmanship, right?
Right.
I think that there was gamesmanship, you know, even back then on the show. So, mm-hmm. you know, you would do things like, you know, back then it was hard to clear songs, right? Like the popular music world and iTunes and everything hadn't quite caught up to like what was happening on Idol with this live audience and the opportunity to have a Bon Jovi song on American Idol. But mm-hmm. they're not like they're saying to themselves, well, I don't want my song on.
Right. They don't want to license it. Mm-hmm.
Right. But they're not realizing yet that like even if Sanjaya murders, you know, Wanna Dead or Alive,
yeah.
it's going to catapult your catalog, boom,
yes.
in a big way overnight.
Yeah,
it doesn't
a great
matter.
Vehicle.
They're bringing all. Mm-hmm. So they hadn't quite caught up. So there were times where there was like you were competing for songs that were cleared to get. This one got more camera time. This one got that. Like no one could I could not complain. I mean, on the premiere, I think I was 20 minutes of the premiere.
Mm-hmm.
My whole segment, my audition, them going to Brooklyn, me breaking it to the band. You know, Seacrest at my studio, like
right.
I couldn't complain. I always got a lot of camera time, but you have to play it. I'm an actor. Like I played into it, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, but behind the scenes, like I feel like looking back, I'm everyone's big brother, everybody's uncle, everybody's, you know, cousin.
Mm-hmm.
I made probably better friends with people that were working on the show. My friend Megan Michaels Wolfneck, she was just a line producer then. She's been the executive producer of the show for years now.
Wow.
She runs Idol. She is Idol.
Good for
she's
her.
She's been there the whole time. And she's incredible the way that she's navigated the changing in the audience and going from Fox to ABC and the streaming and the socials,
oh, yeah.
the direction. You know, of course, they can't be on for 6 months anymore. They're on for like 6 weeks.
Right.
Like one day a week. That's very streamlined. She's done a great job. So like I was 28, turning 29, going to be 30 by the time the tour ended. Mm-hmm. I was friends with other people. Like, you know, I became friends with adults. But yeah, there was drama. Sure. Like in anything.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm a competitive person, you know, like I'm not going to win. Yeah. I'm not beating Carrie. She is the show.
Mm-hmm.
She is Dream It Up. That's the girl.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's the girl. That's great.
And you all knew that. You all knew that going in. I mean, everybody kind of had that same page. They were all sort of on that.
Anyone with a brain that understood the industry at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
They needed to get her songs, and they got her song right away.
Yeah.
Because you can
first,
swing and
yeah.
miss, and they could be crap songs, and they don't engage.
Yeah.
And you have that window, and then all of a sudden it's like it's next season, but. The way they handled her was big time. Like no one could put out a record in this amount of window and this time. I was always pushing the limits a little bit, which maybe hurt me at some points as well. Like the band was back home making a lot of noise.
Yeah.
Where they're going to sign a record deal without me.
Yeah.
This kind of a stuff. A lot of stuff like that was going on. Like, okay, do I go back to the band? Do I just go pursue my stuff?
Mm-hmm.
I have opportunities at TV. I was developing a series with Kelsey Grammer at ABC. ABC bought it. You know, CAA was my agent. Like,
mm-hmm.
I mean, there was crazy stuff going on. When I got eliminated, Simon Fuller, the king,
yes,
was waiting in my dressing room like,
mm.
we're going to take care of you.
Mm.
So it made me think like, okay, was
yeah.
this how it was always going to be?
Yeah. Now you fell, I heard, you know, a lot of people believe you had to fall on the sword for the show. to go when you went at six.
I might have had to fall on the sword for the show, but I also was like pushing the brown boundaries a little bit. You know, we weren't supposed to be on socials, but I was on like the band socials. We weren't supposed to be doing a record deal, but the band was going to.
Oh, you're such
a
bad boy. What are you doing?
I mean, the rules are there are no rules until there are rules. Yeah. You know? So it's like I was going out every night. Mm-hmm. But I'm not like a party animal. I'm not like a drinker or a drugger. In fact, I've been sober nearly not. I mean, like, I don't drink and mm-hmm. I don't use flour for almost 5 years. You
Good
know,
for
so
you.
Like I was never
Good
like a partier, but I wanted to be out.
Sure.
I knew club people in New York, and now I was in the biggest thing in L.A. I was like hanging out, going out, and like meeting people, and it was amazing. Like,
and you were
sitting
young.
Down, like,
you know, people don't realize you're young and you're getting like this amazing opportunity. You're having the time of your life and you want to share that with others. I don't blame you. You're young.
But you're young, but you're not 15 young. You're like 28.
Oh, yeah. You have other urges.
You're
and
also
stuff.
Like a man. You're like, I need to go out. I can't. Because like basically you're working on one song for the whole week.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I'm reducing it. I mean, you're doing commercials, you're doing stuff, you're going shopping, you're doing
promo,
stuff, you're rehearsing.
Yeah.
But
yes, you still.
Yeah, I mean, there was always friendly rivalries with me and Bo.
Yeah.
You know, Carrie and I. We had a great time on the tour. I feel like, honestly, like I looked out for Carrie. I think that she, you know, I like to think that I was like her big brother, you know, and we had like a friendly kind of rivalry together.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew she was, I mean, she's a gifted, I mean, that instrument it's unbelievable. She could wake up and just, she's got one of the biggest and best voices in the world.
Yes. And
no doubt.
Yeah. Yeah. That was, and American Idol was definitely her vehicle to take that and in the powerhouse behind it. And, but you know, you have said that you were very happy that you did leave early and that so much so that you named your independent record label Sixth Place Records, which I thought was adorable, by the way. I think that's so creative.
Well, that's kind of you. I'm glad adorable is what it
is. Well, I'm a girl. I say adorable. It's like the Carrie Underwood, you know, language.
Yeah.
It's adorable.
It's adorable. I dig it. No, you know what?
It's cool. It's cool.
I jumped around. I went home a little early. We had a big summer tour. I was developing a TV show. They were talking to me about Broadway stuff. I wanted to write my own songs. I wanted to do this or that. And like all these things were in play. I was going to sign with Atlantic Records. In fact, Jason Flom, we had a deal in place. And then Lior Cohen in the middle of a night just fired him. And then my deal like sat at Atlantic for a while, and like 19 was going to manage me, but then they weren't, and then blah blah blah. So like all these things kind of happened. So then the new guy Craig Kelman comes in and he's like, I don't even know who you are. And I'm like, and he made me like sing in his office, I remember, and it was totally embarrassing.
Hey, you already were an expert though. You already were singing in hotel rooms with camera lights and stuff.
That's
on
true, but
so
it
you kind of
like,
knew, but yeah, yeah.
And I love, like, I'm back to a point, fast forwarding with some acting stuff where I'm auditioning a lot, and that's cool. I want to earn it.
Yeah.
I want to compete. I want to prove someone wrong. I'll go in early. I'm not expecting things to be offered to me, even on Broadway or, you know, at theater, wherever. Like, I'm totally down to compete as long as I know that's what's happening.
Yes.
Like, you don't go in expecting you're going to meet the new boss and like maybe, you know, kind of get reorganized to then having to like re-audition. You just
So
there's that kind of stuff. But then they brought me back in years later when Rock of Ages exploded and they were getting more into the Broadway business. With my first record, I did it independently, although Sony distributed it, and we did some good stuff with it. I ended up, you know, all that was happening. So I waited like 2 years till I put out a record. And I think I was already in The Wedding Singer by then. And maybe the soap opera. And then
Bold and the Beautiful,
opera,
right? We got to give you props.
Bold and the Beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Were you bold, beautiful, or both?
I think and neither. So I was screwed.
Oh, no. You lasted for a while. So what are you talking about?
Well, they kind of brought me in because I don't know if you know Bold and the Beautiful's history. They do have a history of music and stuff. It's like a fashion family.
Yes, yes.
Right? The Foresters.
The Foresters. Oh, wow. You're bringing back memories for me. Oh, boy.
I mean, Ron Moss was on the show.
Ron Moss, yes.
He sang, Baby, Get Back. Oh, he was in that band.
Yes.
They were called Player. so they would have musical moments on the show. So they brought me in to be this like producer, you know, extraordinaire, right? Constantine Paros, right?
Yeah, I know. They didn't change your first name, which is kind of funny. A lot of them keep your name. What is that? They like your first name. Well, because it is unusual. So I get it.
Because they don't care about the artistic integrity of it. They want it there to be an association with the audience. That's
yes,
it.
Yes.
They're like, he's Constantine, but he's not, but he, that's him.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I know that.
But they
don't
want, they want you to play yourself. Whereas like in a real script or scenario, you're not playing yourself. You
right,
know? But
right.
It was a lot of fun. I think they brought me in early to like be a disruption in this love duo thing. But I think when they got me on camera with the girl, they're like, you're actually with Mackenzie Mousey. I looked too old for her. Because I was like 30 and she was like 20, and that wasn't exactly like what they were doing. Even though the actor opposite her kind of was the same. So then they hooked me up with like her aunt, played by Leslie. I forget her last name.
I don't.
And that.
Yeah.
So then I was like, boom, off. Then the cougar race began.
There right you there. Go. That appealed more to the viewers probably at
that
home.
That was
too.
More my demo. They're like, yeah, more of like the moms are into you, I think.
Well, there you go. You know what? I don't know if that's the worst thing in the world, you know?
Hey, you know? I love all shapes and sizes.
There you go. But you know, I'm gonna take a short break. But before we do go, inquiring minds want to know, do you hate Nickelback now?
No.
I have to know.
Don't.
Do you ever sing
That's
the song again? Do you ever sing the
That's
song?
That's a fun story. We can either touch upon that later, but it was one of those things where one of my songs got pulled last minute because of rights. It was a U2 song and they were doing the Apple commercials.
Yes.
At the time, Beautiful Day I was going to do. It was a big song on the radio. So I had to like audible to Nickelback, which was a big song at the time.
Yeah.
And it just didn't go well. But I think it all was kismet. Now Nickelback is like ironically really cool again. Same with a band like Creed.
Yeah, they're coming back. Yeah.
They're totally coming back.
And speaking of comeback, we're going to talk about that coming in some of the... Yes.
You're such a pro.
Oh, you are. You make it fun. And I have been talking with singer-songwriter and Tony Award nominee Constantine Maroulis. When we come back from break, we'll talk about Constantine's leap from the Broadway stage that solidified his stardom. We'll be right back. Hey guys, are you loving the show? Do you want to see more of The Scene? Well, guess what? You can, because The Scene with Doreen is now a weekly segment on the nationally syndicated television show, The Daily Flash. The Daily Flash is your daily destination for trending stories, celebrity updates, and industry highlights. And it's now your home to watch The Scene with Doreen. You can turn us on and watch every Wednesday across the country. Check your local times and listings at thescenewithdoreen.com. Oh, yes. Welcome back to The Scene with Doreen. I am Doreen Taylor, and I'm here with singer, actor, and Broadway star Constantine Maroulis. That clip was from the 2009 Tony Awards when Rock of Ages dominated the stage with my friend Constantine front and center. Constantine, you're actually a performer after my own heart. You have the soul of a rocker, but the finesse of a musical theater performer. Do you find that one side rules the roost more often and wants to come out?
Thank you for that. Man, that was one of the greatest nights of my life, for sure.
What a hot performance. That was amazing.
You want to hear something funny?
Yeah.
Before I answer your question, if you listen to the top of our number,
yeah,
it comes out of a commercial break, I think.
Yeah.
So it goes into the intro, and like the band is like coming out from the stage and the lights and the pyro. And there's like this kind of little mini intro overture that we do, which is a guitar tapping solo by the great Joel Hoekstra of Whitesnake
and
great guitar players in the world. So I'm off stage and if you listen carefully, there's about probably 16 bars of music and just the band and the sort of, you know, MTV like thing coming to life. the Sunset Strip. You can hear me on a hot mic.
Uh-oh.
Doing my vocal warm-up, which I would always do right before I go out on stage, which is probably in key with what they're playing. So they're like, and I'm going, you can hear it. And people are, I remember Joel being like, what is that? I heard that. And I was like, wasn't me.
I don't know what you're talking about. Must be some feedback.
Why was my mic on like 3 minutes early, by the way? Anyway.
Oh, shame on the sound guy. Shame.
Oh, my gosh, But that was some night. And anyway, no, but to answer your question, I think I think I've become so synonymous with things like Idol and Rock of Ages, and then that sort of 80s kind of 90s sound and that whole thing. And I, you know, in my touring life, more promoters and audiences than not want me to sing, you know, that catalog. They don't want to hear my stuff. You know, I'm playing, you know, big tribute shows and big rock review shows that we've created, and things in the world and style of that big arena rock sound, right? And, you know, of course, we bring it down for some ballads and Frank Wildhorn type of stuff as well. But predominantly, that's what pays the bills. Someone famously said of the song, This Is the Moment, which is the song you played earlier, this is my mortgage. So that is like, I just keep singing, you know, this is my mortgage and Don't Stop Believing and Bohemian Rhapsody until the cows come home, because that's what they want. But of course, the inner actor and artist and, you know, Tony nominee wants to do things that are against that type, right? You want to, I get why, what's sellable to audiences, what, how people see you. If I go out solo, people might be like, well, what is he going to do? Is he doing cabaret? Is he doing stand up? Is he playing his songs? Is it journey? But if I go out with Constantine Maroulis, Foreigner's Journey,
they know.
They get the math. So there is a, there is an inner fight there. And, you know, I'm still very motivated to keep creating. And I love the rocker side. I do. In fact, you know, I'm not slowing down in that capacity as far as like tribute shows and or, you know, other live things like that. But you do want them to listen to your stuff.
Absolutely.
You do want them to consider you for that cool play downtown, a new playwright that doesn't need, you know, a rocker guy, you know. You want to read for things that are and compete for things that are against the type. And I do get to do that. And my people, they know that I want that. But it's just hard to change hearts and minds sometimes. So I do get those opportunities, but I want to do more of that that's against Constantine the rocker stuff, if you know what I mean.
No, it's, you know, it's that you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. You're too good at what you do. You become that. You are synonymous with it. Like, you started your musical journey, BFA degree, musical theater, Boston Conservatory. So you are legit. And yet, did you feel when you went from that American Idol crowd to cross over to Broadway, did you ever feel that that community, the theater community, did a little bit of a pushback on you because you were commercial? Did you feel like you weren't, you didn't belong sometimes?
And then they, but my team at the time handled me well, where they were taking me around to meetings, and I would do things. I would sit down and meet casting people or producers. I would go to openings. I would see shows. I would support, and I would let people, I would remind people, or hopefully in doing so, remind people that I am a conservatory kid. I was in Rent. I did all that stuff long before.
You paid your dues.
My debut was really in The Wedding Singer, where I replaced very early on after they opened. And they were nominated for a bunch of Tonys. They just, the show just kind of stalled after the Tonys, which happens.
Yeah, it does.
So the Sammy part is really the supporting comedic, like supporting lead, you know? He's not Robbie, the Adam Sandler part. He's the other guy. You know, he's in his band. He's like his best friend, and he's got a funny song. So right away I showed, in my hope was that I'm not playing Robbie. I'm playing the supporting part. I'm coming in. I'm taking, you know, a supporting part. It's not about me, but yet I'm still helping the show and they're helping me. So I think my introduction in like that was helpful. That I took one for the team. My contract ended 30 days before they were going to close. Mm. And I didn't make a fuss or anything like that. The other kid that I replaced that they were paying to sit out, a good friend of mine, Matthew Sandovar, mm-hmm. who works all the time, mm-hmm. great character actor. He got to come back for the last 30 shows, which was, and I transitioned into a weird off-Broadway musical called Jacques Brel Is Alive and Well and Living in Paris. This beautiful kind of review of all Jacques Brel music, sort of like, he was like the Dylan of Brussels and of like France and such in the 60s. Very cool, very cool guy. Cool writer, like ahead of its time, No Maquita Pa, like all these beautiful songs, Amsterdam and such. Mm. There was this beautiful review going on off Broadway. I went into that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm like, I'm a downtown. I want to do it all.
Right.
I wasn't like, boom, I'm on Broadway stunt cast in like a lead, like The Phantom.
Right.
I was trying to earn my way up there, all the while developing the thought of Rock of Ages opening.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, when it was time to do Rock of Ages, you know, I had met them very early on. At CAA, they were this little bar show in LA. They were going to go to Vegas. They ended up going to Vegas without me. They lost a ton of money.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I love this idea. I remember my first meeting, they were like, they played me a mixtape, mm-hmm. like literally a mixtape. This is the show, a mixtape. And then it was like, I kind of love this.
Yeah.
I grew up in the MTV era, like the videos were a story. You know, these songs were a story.
Yeah.
This totally works. It's aware of itself, but it's genius. It's got heart. Mm-hmm. And we developed. And then they opened off Broadway with me as the lead.
Mm-hmm.
And we grew an organic audience. No one was paying attention to us at first. It's a little before like the big boom of socials, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
2008, the summer of 2008. But we just grew this word of mouth thing.
Yeah.
And then by the time we went to the Tonys and nobody wanted us there, we dominated.
You dominated.
And it became this global, you know, worldwide like brand. And it's been wonderful. It's been wonderful. But and I've done a bunch of other things since then. But people are always like, Rock of Ages, are you doing anything else?
Oh,
you know, because it's like
they associate
you have so much success with something that like anything else is going to pale in comparison to their sort of like cumulative, you know, kind of perspective of things, right?
It's true.
But you have done other things, you know, so it's a tough game. And I'm glad my daughter wants no part of it.
Good. We're going to talk a little bit about her. And I definitely wanted to bring her up. A lot of the singing you do on Broadway and on stage, it's a lot of finding that balance between a defined theatrical sound and a more grungy, growly vocal technique, because you're doing the rock and roll. That's taxing on the vocal cords. How do you preserve your voice for a grueling 8-show-a-week schedule like Broadway does?
Great question. First off, somehow I'm this freak. I'm a freak. Everybody knows it. Like, they're like, Connie's crazy. He just goes and goes. And you know, I rarely get tired.
Mm-hmm.
I rarely lose my voice, but sometimes you're just going to get like right now, I'm not singing hard every single day.
Mm-hmm.
And I have such bad allergies.
Yeah.
Even though I'm taking stuff, it would be about managing it. Like if I'm in a show on Broadway and the allergies are this hellacious as they've been lately, I'm managing it. I'm navigating it. I'm going hard because I think you get more hurt when you don't go hard.
Yeah.
You have to go hard. You have to give. There's someone in the audience on a Wednesday matinee that thinks it's Saturday night.
Oh, absolutely.
Them.
That is
and
their
like,
Saturday
you know,
night. Yeah.
It's their Saturday. It's like this is they're paying.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so I'm leaving it on the stage every show. So if you're trying to hold back and navigate that way, that's not it. If you're connected emotionally, you know, internally to all the lyrics, to all the storytelling, no matter what show you're doing, it's not as taxing as you think.
Right.
It's just not. It's heavy on your overall body, but you sleep, you drink water, you stay away from alcohol, you stay away from smoking, you stay away from talking too much.
Yes, people don't realize that can kill you. Talking is one of the worst things. Yeah, it's one of the worst things you can do. Who would know, right?
I would like wake up on a day like today and maybe you and I, that would have been the first time I was talking today.
Yeah, you preserve.
You know, I wouldn't talk until right before, you know, in the shower, a little sirens, a little warming up.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd go back to being quiet until I pick up the kid.
Yep.
And then I get her sorted out, take her to practice, then I'd head to the show. So I get chunks and hours of time where I'm not using my voice at all. Mm-hmm. Definitely helpful. Definitely helpful.
Sure.
And yeah, I think, you know, growing up singing in like a garage in New Jersey, rock bands and cover bands and Grateful Dead songs and, you know, endless solos and Zeppelin and rock and singing over a crappy PA with like one speaker trying to blast over.
No reverb. No reverb at all.
Nothing. Yeah,
dry, you know, as guys, dry can be.
And everyone just wants to play louder than the next
guy. Yes, and they keep turning their amps up as I can't turn my voice up any louder, sorry.
So I think learning and callousing,
yeah,
I don't even know if that's a word, my instrument
now. You used it, but you used it right.
It's like practice. Mm-hmm. It's like sports. It's like, no, dude, play hurt.
Yeah.
We play hurt here.
Yeah.
You know? And I think, not to make like a broad statement, but I think that is... I'm officially a middle-aged guy when I notice that some of the younger people in the arts, in the performing arts, are not coming up with that psychotic work ethic. You know, I was in bands. I was in every show. I wanted to sing. I wanted to play. I wanted to write. I wanted to meet everyone. I wanted to network with everybody.
Yeah.
I wanted to go out. I wanted to work.
Mm-hmm.
I played hurt. I didn't want anyone to know I was hurt.
Yep.
Like when I was trying to play sports, I was never bigger, faster, stronger than anyone else, but I wanted to be there.
Right.
So like I couldn't let them know that I was hurt.
Yeah.
Because then I wouldn't even be able to practice, you know? So, you know, kids, they don't want to do 8 shows a week. They want to do 6. They want to do less than mental health. I get it. And I'm all about that. We should have more conversations about the workload, but this is what we do also.
Right.
This is what we do. That's why not everyone gets to do it.
Exactly. It's a blessing when you can do it and you've done it like nobody else. And I want to take one little teeny break and come back because I do want to talk about what you are doing on your solo career and also, you know, just what you have cooking. So I've been talking with Tony Award nominee, singer, actor, and producer Constantine Maroulis. When we come back, we'll find out what Constantine has on tap next and wrap it all up. We'll be right back.
Looking to get your brand to millions of people without wasting money on platforms that don't deliver your message to the right customers? Well, worry no more. Hi, I'm Doreen Taylor, and I'm so proud to announce that The Scene with Doreen is now syndicated across the good old USA. My show is one of the fastest rising new radio shows in the country and a great way to reach a large audience and deliver your message to potential customers nationwide. People hate commercials, but now they don't have to because we create ads that are as great as your business. Become part of this incredible journey with us and let us make your business the celebrity on The Scene with Doreen. Join The Scene with Doreen family. Visit us at thescenewithdoreen.com or call us at 856-625-2375. That's 856-625-2375.
Welcome and come back to The Scene with Doreen. I'm your host, Doreen Taylor, and I have been chatting all hour with singer, actor, and Tony Award nominated performer Constantine Maroulis. Coming out of the break, that was a clip of Constantine's single, Come Back. I love the message of the tune, Come Back. It's not a comeback if you never left. So true. And I love that you put that message out. Why did you feel you needed to put that message out in the world right now?
Yeah, I mean, thank you. It's so nice to hear, like, your work on your show is great. And I love how you guys piece it all together like that.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
I don't know why I wrote this song with such high notes in it. It's
because you can, because you can.
Day now. But that's just where it was at. You know, I feel like the last 10 years have been a bit of a comeback sort of, journey for me in a way. I think, you know, I was dealing with a bunch of turmoil in my inner sort of family unit. And that was a very tough time to navigate, you know, with work, with my family. Circling or fast forwarding, we lost my mom last month.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
So like the last 10 years, thank you, have been a lot of ups and downs, like a lot of cool stuff in the body of work, but also a lot of really hard times. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you know, some, I think you know, some gossip and some fun stuff like that, you know, kind of balancing it in there as well. But I think for me, yeah, I'm 48. I'll be 49 this fall. It's a surreal number to me, but I feel like very motivated and I want to keep working and doing a bunch of cool stuff. I hope to do more film and television. I hope to keep creating new things at Broadway. I feel like I'm in the best place I've been in a long time. Like I told you, I don't drink and I don't do drugs, you know, not for many years. I feel a sense of clarity and motivation.
Yeah.
My daughter's in a great place. She's, you know, she's on the National Honor Society, the junior National Honor Society they have now. She's a seventh grader. She's,
yep,
you know,
13. You're the father of a teenage girl. How does that change your life? Now, that's got to be the biggest change of your life completely.
Well, it's always been since day one, since she arrived. She's been, you know, it's just everything is about her. Mm-hmm. Everything. And I don't think, you know, she doesn't realize that sometimes, and maybe she does, but it's like, that's all we live for. It's just instinctually, you're just like, just hyper-focused on working, longevity, stability, bills, money, you know, her development. But she's doing great. She plays three sports. She's on the high honor roll. She's on the National Honor Society. She's a leader in on and off the field. So far so good. She likes to do some pictures, and you know, she's in some dance stuff and mm-hmm. a little performing stuff, but she's really, that's just because she's a kid,
right?
She's not passionate about it, but who knows, maybe that comes, but hopefully she'll have her own path. And she's such a bright girl that she's got all the choices in the world. So for me, you know, getting to sort of like do new stuff is what it's all about. Mm-hmm. I have a bunch of new musicals in the works. We just wrapped on this thing called East Carson Street.
Yes,
Music by Joe Grushecki, a big Pittsburgh guy, mm-hmm. Big PA guy, provincial sort of East Coast rocker. Amazing talent. East Carson Street tells a story of like this family and friendship group sort of at the fall of the coal and, you know, mining industries there, and mm-hmm. how all those families were so affected by that, because it's like, what do we do now?
Yeah.
This is all we know.
Yeah.
And a kind of tough blue collar family story that we're hoping to, you know, keep pushing down the line. Rock and Roll Man might be going to London later this year, which is the story of Alan Freed, who was, you know,
iconic DJ.
The iconic DJ who popularized the phrase rock and roll, and he played black artists during segregation when no one else would. And he became the king of rock and roll. You know, and there's some other new stuff I can't talk about, but we're working on some new records. But I got a bunch of shows, whether it's me solo or me with one of the big tributes I front, or you mentioned, you know, even Broadway Sings Queen.
Yes.
There's always stuff you can find on my website, ConstantineMaroulas.com. And yeah, you can find all the streaming there, a bunch of new songs we put out. We're going to be putting out pieces this summer, I believe, or maybe this fall, another new record. And just trying to stay productive, you know, that's how my parents raised me, just always grinding. Mm-hmm. And I mean, look, it would be nice to land on like a long running television show like.
Yes.
You know,
not Bold and the Beautiful, though.
Not Bold, but like, you know, something like, you know, House of Cards, you know, type of thing. That's I mean, that's what I would love. You know, I would love that challenge.
You put it out there in the universe, and I think it will come back to you, because almost everything you have set your mind to do, you've accomplished and more. So you are.
Well, that's kind of.
You're very inspirational. You really are. Listening to your story, and just, I love your work ethic. I love that you know who you are and you never change that. You embrace it and you double down on it, which is awesome. And just keep doing it. Keep bringing the gift, my friend. Like I said, you're performing right now. Anyone in the New York City area through August 1st, Cutting Room, New York City, Broadway Sings Queen, perfect for you. Hello. And a 14-piece orchestra, which is pretty nice, too, to see at the Cutting Room. So you're making new music, which I'm excited to hear. And you have to come back and you have to like promote it when you're ready.
I'd love it. And I got a bunch of dates in the on the East Coast and Northeast. If you go to the website,
yes.
concertbrewers.com. Mm-hmm. And I hope to see you at a show real, real soon. And yes, absolutely. We'll be back. Yeah. And thank you for this awesome time. I love the show.
Oh, I love chatting with you. And anytime we want to do it more, you know, I'm here.
All right. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Constantine. Have a wonderful day.
And peace. You. Peace, guys. Thank
Bye-bye.
You.
Bye-bye. Thank you to my guest today, the incredible Constantine Maroulis. And thank you again for tuning in to The Scene with Doreen. I'm here each and every week across the country bringing you the best interviews from the entertainment world and beyond. Get connected with me on social media and on our official website, thescenewithdoreen.com. And make sure to tune in next week so you can find out what's going on. Bye.